Duo. This is Kevin Barrett. It's Friday. This is my day. I'm on Mondays and Fridays. And Jim Fetzer is on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Today I have a really interesting guest with us. It's Kathleen Wynn, a former, I believe, associate director of Black Box Voting, which is blackboxvoting.org. If you don't know of them, you should check them out. This is the leading honest elections outfit in the country, and the issue of honest elections has grown in importance over the past 6 years, I would say. More and more people are waking up to the fact that black box voting machines with proprietary software that nobody's allowed to understand and that leave no paper trails are more or less just a mechanism of election fraud, and it doesn't make any sense to be using these kind of machines, and yet that's what we have all over the country. So I guess Kathleen is on the line, I think. Hi, are you there, Kathleen?
Kevin.
Hey.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. We're going to be discussing some connections between voting fraud, 9/11, and other symptoms of the neoconservative coup d'etat that's destroying American freedom and democracy. Why don't you start out by telling us a little more about black box voting, where it came from, and what it does?
Well, black box voting was founded by Bev Harris, and she is the lady. They refer to her as the grandmother of the election reform movement. She kind of got it started because she is an investigative journalist, and she was going to write an article about the voting machines. She had done a lot of corporate fraud work prior to that, and she wanted to write a story about voting fraud. And she stumbled across one evening while she was doing a search on the internet for glitch and voting machine, and she came across an unprotected FCP site that had the depot confidential memos and files and their source code for their voting equipment. And she knew that there was like 40,000 files. And at that point, she realized something wasn't right, and she took it to scientists to find out. And from there, she and I met in Cleveland. Long after that, she came to Cleveland to attend a town hall meeting, which I had organized. And we hit it off right off the bat. And after that town hall meeting, when we decided we had the same vision, she said, "I'm going to create Black Box Voting as a nonprofit, and we're going to go from there." And from that point on, we've been virtually working together, primarily just the two of us, with a lot of citizen volunteers throughout the country that have done extraordinary work. And so it has evolved through our total concern with what's going on in our elections process, because it's the core of everything in this country, that without our vote, we have no voice, and without any voice, we have no power, and then that's not a democracy. So that it's just kind of evolved by our own curiosity and tenacity to get to the bottom of this and get to the truth, which I'm sure you can appreciate yourself.
I certainly can. As V for Vendetta said, there's something terribly wrong with this country, and it seems to have started really going wrong just about 6 years ago, when the elections started being stolen, and then 9/11 happened, and ever since then we've been living in some kind of neocon fantasy land. So what are some of the biggest stories that you've broken at Black Box, or that you've investigated?
Well, Black Box, I think we're primarily known for the hacks. We were the only organization, election reform organization, that was able to get to look under the hood, so to speak, to look inside these voting machines and find out if what we've been told was true or not. And we brought a Finnish computer expert, Harry Hirsti, and he has extensive background and is well known and respected amongst the scientific community for his work. And he came here in Leon County, Florida. We were able to prove that through the memory card, which we were told by Diebold that could not be done, that Diebold optical scan system, you have a memory card, which is a credit card size piece of equipment that you put into the voting machine to capture all the votes. That's all it's supposed to do. Well, Harry Hursty proved that there, for one, he found that there was a living thing inside this memory card, an executable program, meaning that you could change the program, which he couldn't believe they would put something like that in that apparatus, because it's only, it's to protect and contain the votes as cast. So when you have that capability, he was able to prove that he could manipulate the votes, not change how many were cast, but manipulate how they were cast and change the reports that were brought out of the, you know, generated by the machine that everyone seems to have a lot of faith in. Well, he could also make that reflect the changed votes. And you would think, and then as well as the gems, where the Diebold says is the last, you know, if there was anything done wrong, on the optical scan, it would be caught in the gem software. Not only did it not catch it, it left no trace. And so all the reports, that were generated by the machine, the paper, if you will, were manipulated and reflected the votes, the changes that he programmed into the memory card to be how they were to be cast. So that's in the documentary film, the HBO documentary called Hacking Democracy. It is shown in that film, that how that was done. And it's devastating, because we were assured by everyone from the Secretary of State, election officials, the vendors, that this could not be done. And, we proved that it could. And then the second big thing that we were able to do was we were allowed to, do basically an autopsy on the Diebold optical scan machines in Emory County, Utah. Another courageous election official stepped forward and said, I want to know if this voting system is what they say it is. And so he allowed us to look, because he felt it was his duty as the election, the county clerk who administers the elections, to make certain that these voting machines were safe and secure. And so Harry Hursty came back and he looked inside this system, and again, he found three levels of security holes with a back door at each level, so that you could go in one level if you couldn't get in and change something, and then if you wanted to, you could go into a second or third level, and it could delete ever having been there. You had the capability to, it would destroy any evidence that it was ever there, any manipulation that you would do within those security holes. And so we have been fighting and trying to get our congressmen to have hearings on this, because the biggest thing we've done is put on the table what they said that wasn't possible, the proof, the evidence, that these voting systems are not safe and secure, and that they were certified and passed by testing labs. And so we have brought what I guess the guys at the vendors never expected is the evidence that declares that our concerns are well-founded, and nothing has been done. They've been dragging, obstructionist behavior. A lot of citizens are beginning to wake up to questioning this, but still they're buying these machines. So I would say the proof, the evidence gathering, we've done a lot of dumpster dives and produced a lot of documentation that showed that Diebold was throwing away accounting records that are in violation of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. So, you know, the vendors have proven themselves time and time again to be untrustworthy, and yet we still are told to trust them.
Well, I think more and more people are waking up and losing that trust. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Kevin Barrett with Kathleen Wynn at Black Box Voting. Formerly, I should say, Black Box Voting.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better.
Yeah, well, let her in your heart, but she's election official down in Florida. You don't want to let her into your voting machine. This is Kevin Barrett here on the Dynamic Duo. I'm speaking with Kathleen Wynn, former associate director of blackboxvoting.org. And we were just hearing about how these new voting machines, most notoriously the Diebold ones, are pretty easily hackable. And you'd almost think that that's the way they wanted it, because it just doesn't make a lot of sense that they would have a little card which is supposed to simply accept a number of a total for the votes that would have an operable program in it to allow people to change the votes. That doesn't make a lot of sense unless the whole point of that is to hack it. In fact,
the Harry Hursty, the computer scientist, the guy, the expert that looked into it, he said if anyone would have told him that the executable program existed in the memory card, he would have said they either didn't know what they were talking about, they were crazy, or they were lying. He just couldn't believe that it existed.
Right. They must be paranoid conspiracy theorists, something like that.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, our own scientists here in the U.S. supported his findings, as well as the GAO report came out and supported it, and NIST came out and supported it. And then later, the Berkeley report, the California scientists did another study, and they didn't even get the entire system, but they found 16 more flaws, security flaws in the voting system. And these, unfortunately, it was only the Diebold optical scan and the touch screen. That still counts 40% of the votes in the country, which is significant. And if you bring into the picture the certification process that allowed that system to pass, that allowed ESNS and Sequoia and Hart Intercivic, which are the other three big ones, then you've got to call into question the veracity of all these systems, because the ITAs are paid directly by the vendor to do the test in secret on these systems.
Well, somehow it seems to me that you don't have to necessarily be a computer expert who's tracking all of this down to understand that when you have these corporations making these black box machines that they with proprietary software that nobody's supposed to understand how they work and that leave no kind of paper trail, that there's an obvious problem here. Why would anyone even dream of using such machines unless the whole purpose was to perpetrate election fraud?
Harry Hursty referred to it as being open for business, and that's why they keep saying that that's not true. It was the flexibility, which is a talking point. It wasn't because they wanted it to be literally open for manipulation, but they decided that that would be necessary for it to be flexible. And we said, well, that's a little bit too flexible for anybody, especially in why would you build an architecture like that for an election software? It does make you wonder what their goal was, and definitely they said, well, you can't prove that's what our intent was.
Yeah.
And I said, I could certainly take the leap of logic here and decide that when a for-profit organization is in control of our elections, literally, and they own our votes because they're protected by corporate proprietary secret laws for their software, and that means citizens have no oversight ability whatsoever, and all they're selling these machines on is marketing it to the American mindset of fast, easy, and fun. That's not democracy. Democracy is messy, and it is not fast, easy, and fun. It's deliberate, and it's done in such a way that the people know at the end of the day that their votes were counted as accurately as humanly possible. There is no perfect system, and many of us are beginning to advocate hand-counted paper ballots, because as long as we keep using these machines, believe me, there will be a way to undermine or disenfranchise voters in some way to where your vote is either not counted or not counted accurately.
Well, that sounds good to me. We already have a caller on the line.
Oh, my goodness.
It's Mike in Kentucky. Welcome, Mike. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, now, is this a Mike I know?
Yeah, it sure is.
All right. Well, hey, it's good to hear from you.
Hey, it's good to talk to you.
So, you want to tell us about your little experience here with the rather bizarre kind of authority that we're getting used to in this post-9/11 post-election fraud world?
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of years. I was teaching special education and working on a master's degree in 2005, and was literally hauled out of the classroom and taken to the psych ward. And kept there for about 3 weeks and was released. I was never charged with a crime. I was never even actually arrested. I went voluntarily with the police and wasn't read the Miranda or anything like that. And you know, there's a whole bunch to this, but basically I just finished 45-day incarceration to be evaluated for my competency to stand trial. I'm facing federal charges for a weapons violation. And the way that came about was George Bush was coming to town, and I was active in trying to get the... He was going to speak at the university where I was formerly a graduate student, and I was trying to get the president of the university to show a 9/11 truth film to the crowd before President Bush showed up, you know, so we'd have something to talk about when he got there. And he wasn't doing it, and I was pushing him kind of hard, and I sort of made a statement in an email that wasn't really well worded. I said, eventually he'll be shot for treason. What I should have said was, you know, eventually he'll face trial, be found guilty by a jury of his peers, and be shot by a firing squad for treason or something like that. That was my intent. But the Secret Service came to see me, and we had a nice chat. They were very polite. Took my firearms, which was really just a couple 22 rifles, one 22 pistol, a couple shotguns. I didn't have an arsenal, no automatic weapons or anything like that. I just live in Kentucky, and I've always grown up with guns and target shoot. I don't even hunt. I don't hunt rabbits or birds or anything. A couple of the guns belong to my brother and my nephews, and I just keep them here. So anyway, they took them and they gave them to the local police. Went to the protest, didn't have any problems, waited about a week, about 5 days, you know, didn't want to seem too eager. Went up to local police, and they gave the guns back to me. So I got home, and Secret Service called and said, I want to help you get your guns back. And I said, well, I've already got them back. And he said, well, I don't think you're supposed to have them. And I didn't, you know, go into that. I just said, well, show me the piece of paper that says, the legal documentation that says that I cannot have guns because I've been to the psych ward. And I'll give them to you. Or better yet, I'll give them to my brother or something, you know, so they stay in the family. I didn't hear anything more about it for a while until they served a search warrant.
Okay, and we'll have to hear about what happened after that.
Okay.
Yeah. In this bizarre Orwellian story of post-9/11 America after the break. Stay with us, folks. Definitely need at least a revolution to the point that we can get back the freedoms that were won for us in that last American Revolution back in 1776. And we're I'm talking here with Kathleen Wynn of BlackBoxVoting.org, the leading outfit trying to monitor American elections to make sure they're fair, which of course in the last 6 years they haven't been. And we also have Mike from Kentucky telling us about this horrific kind of Orwellian nightmare that he's been plunged into after simply, you know, pointing out what should be a very obvious fact that that President Bush very likely may someday be executed for treason. But as I put it in my response, in my letter of support to Mike, actually I sent this to the Secret Service, you know, I said, you know, Mike may have made a mistake, and I wonder if it's okay to correct you, correct him by pointing out that actually the real penalty for treason is hanging. But if I point this out, will you come and confiscate my clothesline? And if I argue that he may be executed by, you know, in the gas chamber, will you shut off my gas? Or if I say he might go to the electric chair, will you turn off my electricity? And the Secret Service apparently wasn't all that amused because they didn't write back to me thanking me for that. Anyway, so Mike, you got your guns back perfectly legally from the police, and then the Secret Service came after you.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
Well, so the, yeah, the Secret Service served a search warrant. The affidavit that allowed the search warrant was sealed. You know, it was secret. You couldn't look at it. When it came out, you know, it was just basically said that I had been to the psych ward and therefore wasn't supposed to have guns. But I was arraigned on these weapons charges. It's pretty scary. I mean, it carries a maximum 10-year, $250,000 penalty. I've never been in trouble with the law before. I have a very fine, upstanding, citizen-type background. As I was teaching school. I've been a carpenter, done a lot of construction work in my life. And I was an outdoor educator with Outward Bound and the National Outdoor Leadership School. I have very sound mental health. I rock climbed for 30 years, and I even trained airborne Army Rangers in rock climbing techniques for a little while. So, you know, I'm hoping for a positive outcome in this, but it has been rather disruptive.
When is your trial?
It hasn't been set yet. I just was released a week ago, last Friday, after being incarcerated for 45 days for this evaluation. Yeah, you know, talking to my lawyer and other lawyers and thinking about it myself, it made sense. You know, you've been called crazy, and the lawyer would be sort of negligent or remiss if he didn't, you know, send you in and get a second opinion, right? They evaluated me for about 12 hours out of 45 days.
What did they come up with?
It could have been a little bit more. Yeah,
without
right.
Mind.
It could have been a little bit more cost effective than that.
Yeah.
But I'm nervous about that. I'm afraid, you know, we'll come back and say, oh no, he can't, because then they can haul me in again and force drugs on me and stuff. But we'll fight it if that's what they try.
So you don't know what the outcome of their evaluation was?
No, it'll be due in a couple of weeks. I think that the 15th may be the day that it must be in. I'm not, you know, I heard different things from different people.
Yeah, this is so bizarre. You know, I remember years ago I was interested in the writings of a guy named Thomas Szasz, who argued that a whole lot of the mental health system is really about social control, and that the
yes.
You know, the idea of mental illness that's being used is largely
mythical.
Yeah,
how can you dispute what they say?
Right.
Without going through a lot of trouble.
And what makes this situation even more Orwellian is that, you know, part of the reason that Mike was committed at that time working when you were working for the school, wasn't it, because that you they got a hold of a private journal of yours, which mentioned that
how they do that.
And well, you gave it to him by mistake, but in this journal it said that, you know, you thought that 9/11 was an inside job, and that had a lot to do with why they put you in the psych ward.
And
yeah.
This is America.
Yeah.
Free speech.
The first thing to happen legally was that the board, Educational Professional Standards Board of Kentucky, that certifies teachers, tried to take my certification away. I was
on what basis?
Well, you know, I was hauled in April. I was let out in May. Of course, I didn't finish that job. I never even got to say goodbye to the kids. That was pretty heartbreaking.
Well, you're innocent until proven guilty of anything, I thought.
Well, that's how it's supposed to be. But, you know, schools, well, he's crazy. He's into the psych ward, so, you know,
You know, that they'll somehow, if they stay associated with you, that somehow they'll get in trouble.
Well, you know, it was the end of the year anyway. And so over the summer I looked for other work, and I found a job and was hired. And the first day of work, they, you know, said, oh, they've revoked your, or suspended your certification, so you can't work here. So I had to go back to construction, and that wasn't a big deal. I mean, I make more money and don't work as hard at construction, truth be told.
Yeah, but this sounds to me like a way, a slow but sure, far way of making it clear to the American people that you got to watch what you say, watch what you do,
yeah,
or you will get in trouble.
Yeah,
and
well, the Soviets.
That is a sign to me. They can't do it outright and be blatant about it. Mm-hmm. So they're going to you know, you say one thing that gets the wrong impression, they'll take it and run it to the max, mm-hmm. and then besmirch your reputation before you know it.
Exactly.
And there you have your situation that you had nothing, you've done nothing to deserve this.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me.
And the Soviets did the same thing under Stalin. Dissidents were declared mentally ill and sexual deviants and all kinds of nasty things, you know.
Yes, and we're conspiracy theorists and nuts, and we were called nasty names too because we questioned, and even when we proved that we're right,
right.
they still don't do anything.
Mm-hmm. But of course now with the latest New York Times poll shows that if they want to lock up everybody who doesn't believe the official 9/11 story in a mental hospital, it's going to be a pretty big hospital because that's 84% of the American people.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah,
finally, here, 5 years later.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Kevin, this is the biggest concern I have and the parallel I see with what happened to Mike and they're very arrogant in how they're stomping on the Constitution and just ignoring the Bill of Rights, is that our votes are very much being manipulated, and they are in a situation where they can be manipulated, and there's no way for us to prove that they have or haven't been, other than it's possible. We've proven that it can be done, and it can be done easily without detection. That still doesn't get any groundswell of outrage that concerns me, because the American people are still somewhat complacent of what will we bring about any change in this country if we can't vote these people out.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that you're on the show. If you don't have honest elections, you don't have a democracy.
And we can't do anything else. 9/11, we can't do anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
We will not. To me, all of this concerns me. Our environment, Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth documentary, my goodness. I mean, it's all right there written in plain big letters. We in trouble. And it all comes back to the only power the people have is our votes. And they are controlling our votes. And that's a big signal to me that they have no intention of giving it back any more than they have any intention of having an honest, independent hearings on 9/11.
Yeah.
We're going to have to rise up.
Yeah, revolution does come
things.
To mind.
Yeah, they're not giving us anything. We're going to have to take it. We'll be back in just a moment.
Copy of this show for your friends and family at GCNLive.com or call 877-300-7645.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help, when I was younger, so much younger than today. Well, I think we do need some help here. Anybody who wants to kick in and offer. And I could use some help in making a connection here between three seemingly different but clearly related topics. We have 9/11 Truth, my specialty. We have the specialty of Kathleen Wynn, the former associate director of blackboxvoting.org. And we have Mike from Kentucky, who called in and told us about this Orwellian nightmare he went through after co-workers at a school where he taught found his journals describing the fact that he thought 9/11 was an inside job, and so on. And he was incarcerated fairly briefly in a mental hospital, and that led to a subsequent arrest for illegal possession of firearms, even though he had no way of knowing that it was illegal. And he's in kind of a crazy nightmare scenario. Well, I think these three topics actually are closely related because in all of these cases, we have symptoms of a larger process in which the power is being taken away from ordinary people, is being concentrated at the top of a hierarchy that rules by stealth and deception and myth-mongering. And if you look at the top of that hierarchy, who are these people and where are they getting this approach? I think it has a lot to do with the influence of Leo Strauss, the guru of the neoconservative movement, who taught that American democracy is a threat to all truly human existence. He thought American democracy was like the Weimar Republic in Germany, which he blamed for the rise of Hitler. So he absolutely hated American democracy and wanted to destroy it. And he was the guru of people like Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, Douglas Faith, and the other neoconservatives who took power in Bush's 9/11 cabinet when Bush came into office in 2000. They're all buddies of Mr. Cheney. So these people are all at an all-out war with American democracy. They believe that a small, self-proclaimed elite, that is themselves, has the right to rule by offering big lies to everyone else. And they also believe that politics is warfare and that your domestic enemy in politics is just like your enemy in warfare against another country. That is, you have every right to kill them, to lie to them, and, you know, literally political assassinations for them are no different from having an infantry soldier shoot at an enemy, which explains a lot of things, you know, things like Wellstone and so on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have a bunch of genuinely dangerous lunatics hour, and they're, you know, they're trying to create sort of a medieval world in which people who question the dominant myth, as Mike questioned that myth in his private journal, are going to be harassed and jailed and persecuted and who knows, maybe someday burned at the stake as heretics. And this whole charade will be run by, you know, a tiny number of neoconservatives who know that this mythology that they're brainwashing people with is just BS. But they feel that that's necessary to have the good society where everybody else is brainwashed and they're the ones pulling the strings. So I think that these topics are all pretty closely related, and that 9/11 is kind of the moment where this move into a neoconservative dystopia really begins. Now I don't know, Kathleen. You said that you had quit at Black Box, in part. Well, after you quit, you were able to speak more freely about 9/11. That while you were
right, when you work for 501c3, you have to be totally non-political, and you can't harm or help any political candidate or party. And I really. And, I still work with Black Box Voting, but I just don't get paid. And it's hard to maintain two salaries, and Bev being the founder, I opted that she continue to maintain the website. But I still work with her, and I still do investigative work here in Texas, which there's plenty. And, bottom line is I'm beginning to see we've come to a plateau in the election reform movement, and I think you might sense this sometimes in the 9/11. There was a time period where it just kind of leveled off. But I believe we've come to a point where we brought forth all the evidence. We've made our case. We've even created a citizens toolkit to help citizens get involved in the process. But I believe the system is totally broken, and we are not going to be able to use the system to fix itself because it's not going to change. It's already invested in what they're doing in this agenda-driven administration. And I believe our entire Congress has been taken over by the corporate America. I think we truly are a fascist state because lobbyists and the Abramson debacle, we're finding out money from corporations is controlling legislation that favors them, not us. And I haven't seen any legislation passed lately that favors the people in any shape, form, or fashion. I've seen lots of dog and pony shows, but I've not seen any real substance come out of Congress that favors education, environment, anything that helps people's lives, live better lives. I felt that I wanted to take a little more radical approach to figuring out how to build critical mass. I think, as you say, we need to take it back, but we haven't quite figured out how to do that in a way that's unified. I think we have to figure, in my mind, and I couldn't do this from the platform at Black Box Voting without harming its 501c status, but I really believe we need to start thinking how to harness the commitment, the passion that is obviously in 9/11. And I was in New York that day. I lived in New York and worked there for 20 years, and I was there on 9/11 and saw what happened. I saw it, And I saw the, and I was there to experience the aftermath. And the New Yorkers wanted to know why, not who. And as we kept making our case in election reform, I kept seeing no response from our government of any real, you know, value that showed me they really cared. Cynthia McKinney did, and look what happened to her. She could question 9/11, and she's the one that stood up and spoke out against these machines, and the Republicans in Georgia crossed party lines to make sure her opponent won in the primary. I mean, their stealth matters definitely approach being taken in every aspect of our society to keep the people under control and to keep the propaganda out there front and center so that the truth doesn't get out there, so the masses will not unite, because that is the biggest fear they have, in my opinion, is if 9/11 advocates, environmentalist advocates, anti-war advocates all joined forces with the election reform advocates, and we became one big force that didn't get caught up in our own hierarchy and an agenda. And look, what are we trying to achieve here? Our government, to take it back and give everyone, whether they, and it's not a partisan issue, it's an American issue. And to wake this country up, and I haven't quite figured that out yet, and I was hoping by reaching out to you, Kevin, and what you guys are doing is the most honorable, noble thing, to speak the truth about what happened to those people that day, our citizens, our fellow citizens. I'm devastated by it still. And so I want to reach out to all of you, that your listeners, to help them understand we need to figure out how to come together as a united front to address this, because I don't think we're going to be able to do it any other way.
Well, I agree with you, Kathleen, and I agree also that 9/11 and election fraud are two really good issues to lead with here, because in both cases, who can possibly be against us? Now, I think this is even more the case with 9/11, because the the psychological, emotional impact is so great. I mean, who could possibly be in favor of a government murdering 3,000 of its own people to institute war and fascism?
And if they did, Kevin, why? And what is? And that brings big bells in my head, and red flags go up everywhere, that maybe that agenda that they're trying to control the Middle East and dominate the planet and all that. It's not an old wives' tale. It's really happening right in front of our eyes. And Americans psychologically have lived a much easier life than most people in the rest of the world. And I look at it and I'm going, we don't have all the time in the world to stand up and figure out how we can have one voice. I mean, when I saw you stand up to Sean Hannity, I applauded you. Because Americans have an inferiority complex to authority that they feel that they cannot speak, you know, strongly and passionately without fear. And I think that is one of the reasons that we have not been as successful as I thought we would be.
I think you're right, Kathleen. I think a lot of us are turning into a nation of wimps or sheeple, as 9/11 truthers call them. Some of us are getting mad and speaking out, too. So I think it's kind of a touch-and-go situation. It could go either way. So we'll be back with Kathleen Wynn of blackboxvoting.org after the break.
It's no secret that Genesis Communications Network depends on listeners like you. Now you can do even more to hear Genesis shows in your area. Simply call your local radio stations and tell them about your favorite GCN programs. It's easy. Log on to GCNlive.com or call us toll free, 877-807-4048. Make a difference. Call your local station and contact us through affiliate relations at GCNlive.com.
I know this is time.
Democrats didn't seem to learn from their mistakes in 2000 when Al Gore conceded an election that he obviously won. And he's had some regrets about that. You know, he just recently pointed out that according to recent reports, when Bush was given the notorious August memo, bin Laden determined to strike in the United States, he turned to the person bringing him the memo and said, "Well, you've covered your ass now, haven't you?" And Gore went on and said, "You know, I can't promise, and I'm not 100% convinced that if I had, you know, been elected president or taken office in 2000, that 9/11 wouldn't have happened, but..." That was pretty cool what he said. But, you know, he's maybe learning from his mistakes awfully slowly. And then in 2004, John Kerry didn't seem to learn from Al Gore's mistakes at all, did he?
He gave in. He folded like a deck chair on the Titanic. It was less than 12 hours, and he made that decision by listening to Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell of Ohio telling him, and there were like 300,000 provisional ballots, and there were 250,000. I mean, the number kept changing, and they never kept an accurate accounting of how many people voted provisionally. And Blackwell flat out told Kerry that there weren't enough. Based on Blackwell's word alone, Kerry conceded. Yet he collected like $40 million to have take it to litigation if necessary to make sure that every vote was counted. But he took Blackwell, who was the chair. He was a similar situation as Catherine Harris in Florida. He was chair of the Republican committee there in Ohio, and he was the Secretary of State of Ohio as well. And he told Kerry, "Oh, you can't win. There's not enough provisional ballots cast voting for you." But there was never clearly any accounting for all that were cast, nor did they count them all. And he took him at his word, and I couldn't believe it. We all fell out. I'll never get over that one.
Yeah, well, I was pretty puzzled, too, because, you know, I stayed up late that night. When I went to bed, you know, Kerry was just winning in a landslide. All the exit polls were showing he was going to win, you know, 52-48, 53-47 across the country in a massive electoral college landslide. And I woke up in the morning, and the whole thing's been flipped. You know, I really
was like,
Kerry.
Wait a minute, what about you're going to fight for every vote to be counted? And then it's almost as if someone threatened him and said, "Don't even mess with this one." Because I was in kind of accounting for the recount. Not only was it not random, I videotaped it, and it was neither random, and they chose specific places that they swore did not have anything to do with, you know, anything, but they counted the votes in private to make sure the hand count of the ballots matched the machine count, so before the recount occurred in front of the observers. And I got them on videotape admitting that, and three people were indicted, election employees were indicted, and are awaiting trial on that. But they've been dragging their feet on that because they're protecting the guys at the top who had to know. These people were only doing what they were instructed to do or implied, you know, this is the way they've always done it. And the people at the top knew about these procedures and did nothing to stop or make sure it was clear. So ultimately, at the end of the day, it stunk to high heaven, and a lot of people feel that this was Kerry gave in because it was already planned all along that he wasn't going to win.
Well, yeah, you know, that's what I kind of thought, too. So when Kerry sent me a letter last summer, an email, the subject header was "The Difference You Are Making." And this was right when my, you know, problems had broken out with the university and Steve Nass, all these Republicans, a couple of Democrats are calling for me to be fired. So I get this email from Kerry. Of course, it was a Nass email, but it sounded like it was meant for me because it said, "The Difference You Are Making. Dear Kevin, over the last 19 months, when you could have walked away, you dusted yourself off, got back on your feet, dug deeper. And you
thought, wow, you should practice what you preach, yeah."
Right, so I wrote back to him with the subject header, "The Difference You Are Not Making. Dear John, you, my war hero friend, are a feckless, yellow-bellied wimp. 19 months ago, when you could have walked away, you did. You let the Bush crime family and their 9/11 perp friends, the neocons, steal the election you won in a landslide 53-47%. If you had the slightest shred of guts or integrity, you could have had us all out in the streets taking back the country. Instead, you tucked your tail between your legs and fled like the coward you are. Unless, of course, the two candidates from Skull and Bones had the whole thing fixed in advance. Either way, it appears that masturbating in a coffin in front of your sick, daily frat boy buddies doesn't do much for your intestinal fortitude. As far as I'm concerned, you are history, but hey, prove me wrong. Get on board with that love of truth now or condemn yourself to historical irrelevance. Sincerely, Kevin."
Yes, hear, hear. Bravo. Well, the bottom line is, he owed it to the people that supported him. And what happened to that $40 million? He never did, give it to, David Cobb, the independent candidate, the Green candidate, was the one that called for the recount and spent the hundreds of thousands of dollars to have that done. And it should have been Kerry, who had plenty of money. And he's never given that back or done any, let anyone know what he did with that money. Kind of like the Pentagon missing how many trillions of dollars. It's like our money is always disappearing and they never have any accounting for it, but that's okay. Mike is going to go to jail if they can help it because, you know, it's just things like that. The obvious disparity between the have and the have-nots, the hierarchy in our country, a democracy has to have a lot more equality than it's showing lately, and I have no faith in the system. It's not that I don't have faith in the American people. I have that. They're it. If they don't stand up and fight for this country, we will lose it, and I'm counting on them to do that.
Well, you know, Kathleen, there's a great prose poem by Baudelaire, who's one of my favorite twisted, decadent French poets, and it's called Kill the Poor. Well, that's the English translation, Kill the Poor. And Baudelaire describes how he was walking down the street and there was this poor guy in the gutter begging for money. And so Baudelaire just was so disgusted by this guy's, you know, sort of obsequious begging that he took his walking stick and started beating the crap out of this guy, you know, who's like, you know, sick and lying in the gutter and starving. But then, Baudelaire describes how a miracle happened. The guy, you know, this poor, starving beggar jumped up and beat the crap out of Baudelaire.
I'm hoping that miracle will happen, that the American people will rise up and realize their birthright. We are literally letting them take it out from underneath us and our eyes wide open. And the red flags are all there, and I hope that we will continue to work together. I am very much interested in the 9/11 truth advocate sympathy, whether you guys get the public hearing, because we're calling for a public hearing as well for all the evidence to be, you know, to find out what went on, how these systems were certified, and why did the senior programmer for Diebold design it in such a way that it would allow it to be manipulated so easily. I mean, we need to have public hearings, and you'll have $40 million spent on Clinton's sexual escapades, and $600,000 was it on the 9/11?
Well, no, it was like a little over $10 million, but it was still a small fraction.
It is like, and there is no comparison in the amount of money spent on something that the major attack on this country ever doesn't get hardly a tenth of what Clinton got for what he was doing. And so it's just mind-boggling how this continues to snowball, and how do we stop this runaway train is a perplexing question, and you do make a difference. I am honored to have this opportunity to speak with you because you are very bold person to stand up and speak so openly, because it is not well received in our country today, such people to do that.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
And it's inspiring, Kevin.
Well, thanks, Kathleen. You know, I've had random emails from people who saw me on Fox, and I'm getting, you know, it's about 60-40 positive. So, you know, maybe there's still hope out there. We'll be chewing this over and trying to figure out whether there is still hope out there just a few moments when we come back. Stay with us.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
One for you, 19. He was talking about one guy in a cave on dialysis in Afghanistan and 19 Muslim impersonators running around with wads of CIA dispensed $100 bills, pretending to take flying lessons at CIA drug import airstrips, partying on Abramoff's casino boats, You think that's what the Beatles were talking about? I don't know. Maybe I'm just a crazy conspiracy theorist. And I'm on the air today with another crazy conspiracy theorist, Kathleen Wynn, blackboxvoting.org. These days, only the crazy conspiracy theorists can tell the truth, and that's what we're trying to do here on the radio. Kathleen, Florida. What kind of place is Florida anyway? It seems like the corruption that's overtaken our country has sort of begun. Like Florida's got this gaping wound that has been festering and rotting, all the gangrene is creeping through the rest of the country. You know, that was where the election was stolen in 2000. That's where we had these CIA drug import airstrips disguised as flight schools, where these alleged hijackers who were mostly still alive
Bay of Pigs. A lot of the people from Miami were involved in that. Florida is a very interesting state, and I found it very interesting that Jeb became governor of Florida and George became governor of Texas. And they're very interesting pivotal points that catapulted, put them in a perfect position of power. And particularly Jeb Bush when it came to the election issue there in Florida, because they have passed laws. Their legislature has passed unbelievable laws that don't even allow for a paper trail. They went for the total touchscreen DRE, no paper whatsoever. So you would be totally at the mercy of the machine count to tell you the outcome of an election. And I find that insane, considering all that we've learned about these machines, and these are the Diebold machines. And the ES&S machines are just as suspect, as well as Sequoia, which is owned by Venezuelan businessmen. So it's a foreign-owned company, and we're using their voting machines here in our country. And I have nothing against Venezuela, but I do find that when we have problems as it is in our own country, that just adds more to the problem, having it outside of the country where they make them, manufacture them. So Florida has turned into an obstructive, belligerent, against any kind of election reform that is meaningful in any shape, form, or fashion. And there are wonderful activists down there trying to fight that beast, and I have to say, the woman that had supposedly thought she had won and asked for a recount. I mean, there was all kinds of issues in the last election. They were constantly having problems, questionable elections, and nothing comes of it. Nothing is ever really resolved. It just seems to fall to the wayside, and no accountability, nothing changes, and they only get worse. And you're right, it's spreading throughout the country, while at the same time, activists and election reform are also taking and standing up and speaking out, but it's not enough yet to get that level of citizen outrage necessary to get them to listen, because they are still purchasing these machines throughout the country. They haven't put a hold, we would say, gotten out of moratorium. No more spending. Let's check out and find out what's wrong with these machines. Same thing with 9/11. Who would not want to know if these machines were safe and secure or not? Why would you not? Why wouldn't the government stop everything and not have hearings and go, hey, these citizens brought out this evidence. It's very disturbing and certainly causing the question your integrity about telling us these machines were safe. But the thing about it is our own government passed the HAVA Act, and it was written by Bob Ney and co-written by Steny Hoyer of Maryland. And Bob Ney got in a lot of trouble. He's from Ohio, and he's now being indicted for some issues with money himself. I mean, it's the people that are controlling our election system have questionable backgrounds in many instances that call into question everything related to our elections. And a lot of them are probably afraid of opening the can of worms. But if they were elected on these machines and it proves that these machines didn't count their votes accurately, perhaps it would call into question whether they're legitimately in power. And they sure don't want to talk about that. So they're trying to keep us, they're throwing us bones here and there to keep us quiet. You know, like the Holt Bill 550, they're talking about a paper trail. Well, a paper trail is not a paper ballot, and it's still counted by machine. And any paper counted or generated by machines is subject to being manipulated, and there's no way any of us would be able to know for certain, because there is no legitimate way to count it where you'd be certain of it. It's insane that we continue to go down the same road over and over again, trying to make excuses for these machines and putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. And our election process is broken from start to finish. We need to stop, take a deep breath, and start all over and go back to hand counts. And I think they're deathly afraid of hand counts because it definitely puts the power back into the hands of the people. And imagine if the people chose got in power and who they took out of power. They don't want that to happen. I don't believe it because of the way they're acting about everything that we've told, you know, brought forward. They're acting like it's, we're crazy. And the evidence is there. It's not our opinion. It's not theory. It's fact. And they're just pretending it's not there. It's amazing.
It is.
I don't know what else to, you know, I'm just very angry about it. I'm very frustrated as to how to deal with it effectively.
Yeah, well, I think people, a lot of people are in denial. And it's, you know, my aunt is a world-renowned psychotherapist who has treated, she's one of the world's leading experts in treating people with phobias and so on. And she recently read my new sort of diatribe, autobiographical satirical book, Truth Jihad. And she said, wow, you know, I never realized that there could be this kind of an example of what she calls the don't know injunction that could just take over a whole country. And, you know, she's talking about how in certain family situations, there are family dynamics lead to people being in denial about things where they just don't want to know. And there's this don't know injunction that prevails, and people don't even look in these certain areas. And she sort of woke up and saw to what extent that is ruining our collective consciousness in America today. People, at some level, really don't want to know. They're looking away from these horrific crimes that have been committed over the past 5 years. Doesn't Canada count their ballots by hand?
Yes, they count theirs by hand. The big issue here, I mean, we can have Olympics and we can go to Mars, but we can't count our votes by hand. That's too hard. The bottom line is their big problem with hand counts is there are too many issues to put on the ballot, and it would take too long to count them. And I'm thinking they're not even putting the machine counts are problematic almost always.
Great. Well,
and they never have the count on the
So we'll be back in a second.
If you like a copy of this show, come to GCNLive.com and reserve it today. Or call toll-free 877-300-7645. Doing from Miami Beach, B-U-A-C.
Back in the USSA here, Kevin Garrett talking with Kathleen Winniff, formerly of blackboxvoting.org. Now, the USSR was set up when the Bolsheviks, who were actually the minority party, chose the name Bolsheviks, which means the majority party, and that way the minority was able to become the illusory majority, and they ruled a one-party state for most of the rest of the century. It seems like we have a one-party state going here in the USSA right now. It's hard to tell what kind of one-party state it is, though. Is this purely these neocons who've taken over the Republican Party and used the Republican Party to take over the country, or are the Democrats complicit in this takeover, and to what extent are they complicit? You know, we were discussing, Kathleen, how you said that your organization, Black Box Voting, is a non-profit, 501c3 corporation, and so you can't lean towards any political candidate or party, which is why you had to resign in order to speak about 9/11. But wait a second, I have a 501c3 corporation too, sponsoring MUJCANET, the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth, MUJCA.com. And, you know, we try to, you know, try and speak the truth about 9/11, which we don't think is a partisan issue.
Well, we're in election reform, so we would be, our work went directly to how elections were conducted, and we had to be very careful because Beth Harris, like many people who are controversial and speak the truth, had a lot of people who were trying to find any reason to undermine her work. So she had to walk a very fine line, and because she has enemies, people who would like her to be quiet and go sit down. And so ultimately, it had to get to a point where we didn't think it would necessarily we'd be working in that environment forever. We'd have to branch out and try to expand where it would, you know, I could, because the whole face of this, the profile of everything is beginning to change. It's evolving, and I just didn't want to take any risk that what I did or said could harm Black Box Voting, because she has, you know, the work we did is necessary and important to citizens waking up to this, and we want them to have that website to go to and to refer to, because a lot of people, a lot of help and mentoring there and information. It's like a library of information about anything and everything related to election reform. And the bottom line is it comes down to, like, Dennis Kucinich has introduced a bill, H.R. 6200, Paper Ballot Act of 2006. It's to amend the Help America Vote Act to require states to conduct the presidential elections using paper ballots and to count those ballots by hand. It's been introduced. So there's hope, but there is a big push to get Rush Hall's bill, which is which is the whole bill 550, which is using optical scan machines, and we'll have paper trails or ballots that are counted by machines, not by hand. So they're pushing like crazy to get that through. So I wanted to be able to speak freely on either side of the aisle, and I think when it comes down to it, the Democrats have not stood with us as strongly as they could have or should have, in my opinion. I think they're the good cop to the Republican bad cop. They have not stood up and spoken out against a lot of issues that are their core value, their principles. And to me, without that, they're not a party in my mind. They have to stand for something, or in the country song, they'll fall for anything. And so ultimately, I see it as really one party system. I don't see them as the opposition party. I see them giving in all the time to things that are totally against what they are supposed to believe in and what I vote. You know, I tend to vote Democrat, but I vote for the person. And I find that both the Republican and the Democrat Party have been a huge disappointment for some time now. And I think they've really been overtaken by corporate America. I think they're beholden to the money that runs our elections. You have to be a kabillionaire to run for office. Mr. Smith doesn't go to Washington anymore.
That's right, and that's why I think that the third and fourth and fifth parties, especially the Greens and the Libertarians, are a good way to go to the extent that you get involved with party politics. And also, I think we have to use communication and symbolism, and we can use the elections for what they really are, which is a spectacle, a public opinion influencing spectacle, more than an actual mechanism of governance. And one thing that a lot of 9/11 truth people are hoping to do is to get to New Hampshire for the primaries, the earliest presidential primaries, and then go on to Iowa and have a 9/11 truth candidate, and then have 9/11 truth people just dogging all of the other candidates so that the media up there can't possibly avoid reporting on the fact that there's a 9/11 truth revolution happening in these primary states where the media is, you know, does saturation coverage.
Well, I believe if the 9/11 truth advocates can get that out, the truth out to the American people of what really happened, and the evidence that's certainly convincing to me, in a court of law, I would certainly think it would have, you'd have a chance of winning your case, hands down, that it was orchestrated in some way by our own government. Bottom line is we need to, an issue that does wake the country up to realizing that we are being slowly but surely taken over, in every way, and my recourse is becoming less and less. And I think that's great to get out there and get the word out, the truth to the people. But believe me, we have to have alternative plans in place, because they're not going to sit quietly by and allow that kind of truth to make its way to the mainstream. If they're going to, like I think Mike Rupert said, an imperialist government isn't going to suddenly stop in its tracks and turn around on its own and change and go the other direction. And so in order for us to get it to do that, it's going to take a humongous effort on the American citizens. And we've always come together for every other major issue in our country's history. I can't think of a greater issue than now to get what's happened at 9/11, our elections, our environment, our education. We need to come together now and start working to make certain that when you do run for office, that you can actually get into office. And that is the key. And get the money out of running for office so that more people who really are in it for the right reasons run and are not controlled by those who pay for them to get into office. It's kind of like we're on that wheel and we can't get off of it. We're on a merry-go-round and it keeps going around and around, and we're going to have to stop it and go a different direction, because if insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And I say think outside the box. And hopefully people will visit blackboxvoting.org. There's a citizen's toolkit that really explains it. It's user-friendly, how to get involved in your elections, because that will be very helpful to your candidates, for them to understand there's something even for candidates, how to protect them so that they don't get boondoggled before they even get started. And I think that people should use that toolkit, because we wrote it with that in mind, to be a living document that would help citizens figure out how to take that first step and do one thing. And if everyone in the country would do one thing toward regaining our government back into the hands of the people, I think we'd win this without it being a major, as difficult as I'm afraid it's going to be.
Yeah, I think we definitely all have to do at least one thing, and I do think that at some point we're going to have to start stepping out into the streets. That's kind of a part of the human condition seems to be that people get out into a public space with their bodies. They don't just hang out on the internet and make it, show that they're there and they're not going to take it anymore. That's how we overthrow who they are.
Well, it's inspiring, yes. Invigorating.
So we just need to keep working on public opinion until people are ready to hit the streets.
Well, if you guys do the 9/11 thing, I would love to know about it, because I'd love to participate.
Well, you should keep up with 911truth.org and 911blogger.com. We'll be right back. Kevin Barrett, talking to Kathleen Wynn of Black Box Voting, and we're having a pretty interesting time here discussing what's happened in this country and what we can do to fix it and get our country back. Kathleen, I saw that there were some stories at Black Box Voting about these machines in the last election that changed a lot of Democrat votes to Republican votes, and Bob Pullman, he was running as a 9/11 truth candidate in Florida, and he got... He was reported officially as getting 44% of the vote, but there were a lot of people in that district that were saying that they tried to vote Democrat and were getting straight Republican results.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so Bob, that's a really interesting case, because he tried to run with only something like $100,000. Normally, to unseat an incumbent, you need in the millions. You need at least a million or more. And so he was vastly underfunded. Every media outlet, corporate monopoly media outlet in his district, just hammered on him for being a crazy conspiracy theorist. His massively funded opponent took all of these quotes about what a nut he was and spent tons of money to just, you know, blast the voters with these things, you know, lots of mailers, you know, lots of advertising and all the media. And still, even according to these you know, Diebold machines or whatever they were that were turning Democrat votes or into Republican votes, the official total was that he still got 44% as a 9/11 truth candidate. So that tells me right there that, you know, being a 9/11 conspiracy theorist doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to get a lot of people voting for you.
Oh, no. But, see, remember that they also discovered, they think that they can slice these, you can manipulate them to get a certain percentage. And if you underestimate, you know, like they probably didn't estimate properly how well received this 9/11 candidate would be, and so they underestimated. I mean, they can manipulate the machine to slice it just enough that it doesn't raise anyone's attention, you know, send up any flares, or call meet the standard to call for a recount. So there are ways to slice it in every precinct, and they may have underestimated. And a lot of people, statisticians, are out there saying that they believe Karl Rove's polls were based on what he had anticipated the manipulation should be by percentages, and that's why the Democrats won, is he underestimated just how high. And so they're going to get more sophisticated, and believe me, we haven't seen the last of the technical solution, and it's going to get more sophisticated and more difficult to be able to see whether you really won or lost. And there's rumors going around about a crypto solution, and the scientists are not going to rest until there's a technological solution. They do not want to go back to hand count. So, yes, all of the, I think we should always be hopeful, and we should always get out there and support these candidates, but keep in the back of your mind the reality that as long as the machine is counting your vote, you really do not know. There is no way for you to know that it was counted as you cast it. And if that happens and they want to rev up their agenda and they want to become more arrogant with controlling power, believe me, they will do it because they have the ability to do it, and there's no way we can prove it. And that's their big protection, is they're protected by the very laws that shouldn't even be part of the election, proprietary secret laws. So never, ever trust the machine to give you a fair count. But I'm happy to hear he did well. But
yeah, it seems to me that, you know, these two issues, 9/11 truth and election fraud, to get taken together, really, if anybody takes a serious look at these issues, the whole illusion of the legitimacy of this government is completely demolished. And I wonder, you know, if we're going to reach the point where, you know, we'll need to just kind of throw caution to the winds and say this, you know, this whole system is completely rotten, completely illegitimate. I'm not going to go along with it at all anymore. People are going to have to do things like, you know, putting on ski masks or V for Vendetta masks and going to their polling place and smashing the machines. I
foresee a lot of people beginning to start to give a symbol. I really believe, Kevin, that after 4 years of being in the middle of this and seeing it up close and personal, I don't feel confident that the system is going to rise up like a phoenix from the ashes and suddenly see the light. I think they feel protected by the voting machines not being, you know, being able to be manipulated. By the fact that 9/11 occurred, they overplayed their hand big time, because look at all the evidence that was gotten from video. And I've been overwhelmed with it. If you guys ever had a big conference with all these videos that get people, YouTube is wonderful at putting up all the 9/11 videos. It's all there.
Oh, yeah.
The American people, all they got to do is look.
It's clear. 9/11 DVD project. I had Tom Tibetan on, or Tom Tweeden, this is how you pronounce it, on Monday, of 911DVDproject.com. And you can get 9/11 DVDs, high quality, you know, excellent image quality, on actual DVDs for as little as 50 cents a piece.
Wow.
911DVDproject.com. So that's like the next step in this video 9/11 truth revolution. But yeah, continue about YouTube.
Oh, I was just going to say, 9/11 is proof to me that the elections are no longer in the hands of the people, because if the evidence that is there, that so clearly shows that there is something totally fishy going on. And it certainly points a finger at our own government in some way orchestrating it. If they felt that when people had any power to take them out and get rid of them, they would never have done it that blatantly. I believe they feel totally at ease that they've already taken over enough and that we're complacent enough to let them do it. And I would, the last thing we, the old Chinese proverb is always do what your enemy doesn't expect you to do. And I believe the last thing they expect is for the American people to be resolute and to not give in to this and to keep pushing. And I hope, and that's why I am joining with you guys. And I hope to join with any other group that sees the truth, that wants the truth, because I think together we will be heard, because the two go hand in hand. The two, that the 9/11 is the emotional aspect, and the voting is the core of our democracy. And one, the two will help elevate the truth to the level where people will see it clearly and no longer turn away from it, but will deal with it, accept it, and come together as a country. We haven't been united in a long time. We've been divided by our parties and everything you can think of. And I think 9/11, if that doesn't bring people together, what can? It certainly got my attention. I was totally immersed in election reform for 4 years, and I took a moment, looked around, and saw 9/11, went, oh, my God. It is as bad as I thought. So I believe together, I still see a future where election reform advocates and 9/11 truth advocates can come together and really be a powerful force in this country for change.
And I think we're already working on that, and we are getting
there.
Yeah,
we already started the ball rolling, but I think we need a bigger... When I see the government be a little more responsive, then I know we've reached critical mass. Because
yeah,
they seem to be deaf ears to us, and I want to make them a little afraid of us for a change.
Well, you know, I think they are afraid of us, Kathleen, especially on the 9/11 thing, with the kind of, you know, poll results we've been seeing, where 36% of the American people believe that top U.S. officials committed conspiracy to mass murder and high treason on 9/11, and only 16% believe the official story. Those kind of poll results are, I think, really panicking the powers that be, who didn't expect that. I think they were going with a, you know, standard psychological wisdom, and the neocon wisdom, which of course is that the vast majority of people will never figure out what you're up to, and for those who see you for what you are,
exactly.
They will be cowards. They won't try and do anything because they're afraid. Well, I think we've already broken through.
Well, you're absolutely correct, and I agree with you wholeheartedly with that.
So keep up the great work, Kathleen, and good luck to blackboxvoting.org, which is trying to restore integrity to our voting process and bring back American democracy, the same democracy that was stolen from us with the stolen 2000 elections, followed by the 9/11 inside job. And working together, 9/11 truth people and voting integrity people can indeed take this country back. It's been great talking with you, Kathleen. Take care. And we'll be back on the Dynamic Duo next week. Hang in there, people. We'll get through this.